Hello and welcome to the Brown Sports Convos podcast with a special edition, to say the least. Mm-hmm. We have some football guys here who you might know from our Thursday Night Football is Bad podcast series. But now, since we have the NFL draft coming up, mm-hmm. we have a bit of a twist on that. Draft analysis is bad.
That's right. That's right. I'm David Cody.
Yeah, I'm Ethan Jobson, by the way.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about perhaps the most important Thursday night football event. The NFL draft.
Exactly.
So this kind of is an extension in that sense of Thursday night football is bad, but we're going to talk about the draft takes that we've seen and the kind of draft discussions and arguments that we've seen that don't make a whole lot of sense to us, because those always mm-hmm. come around every year, especially in a year where there's so much talk at the quarterback position as well at the top end of this draft. So yeah, I'm very excited.
I think me and David have both been kind of on the NFL draft stupid discourse beat for a while now, and have always kind of wanted to be doing some things about it. And I think this is kind of the perfect format to encapsulate our annoyance and frustration and unintentional comedy we get from the so-called draft experts that are around this media landscape.
Yeah. And I mean, it's obviously the nature of the NFL draft. Like it's a total complete crapshoot, like more so than the NBA draft. Like, everyone's guessing and everyone pretending they're not guessing is lying to you. So every year we do get takes that look bad in hindsight, always, but we also get takes that look bad at the time before the draft. Which is kind of what we want to talk about, that always end up looking bad at hindsight. Things like the Lamar Jackson should play wide receiver.
There are always those. I think we're trying to focus in on those that anyone who is even a casual fan, you think, could obviously see what's wrong with that. I'd throw in like Deshaun Watson is worse than Mitch Trubisky. There is a history of this stuff, and I think this is kind of it's time to cement in the historical record our calling this out right now before it becomes easy to say.
So on that note, let's get started talking about the things we've seen at the quarterback position. Particularly in this draft, we have five quarterbacks who have a pretty, I would put money on the five quarterback all going top 15. And I think there's a good shot they all go top 10. But I do want to talk about first, the number three pick, because that has kind of ended up being where the draft starts. And for some reason, the initial signs seem to be pointing to Mac Jones. Wait.
What do you mean for some reason, David? Why would you ever doubt an Alabama immobile quarterback prospect? When have those ever not worked out?
I don't know. For some reason, an Alabama kind of stationary QB who was throwing to the four best receivers in the country 2 years ago the two best receivers in the country last year. Something tells me it's not the best pick to go with at number three.
Along with like the top quality offensive line, like a historically good coaching staff. I don't see why that'd be a concern to anyone.
Can't imagine at all. I mean, if you look at guys from Alabama, like Joe Namath, who turned out well.
Tua was okay-ish his rookie year, slightly worse than Ryan Fitzpatrick, but I guess that has solved the Alabama quarterback formula.
That justifies drafting Tua's literal backup at number three.
Yep.
I think there's a lot of conversation to be had about whether or not this is actually something to put weight into, or whether or not this is just a dumb smokescreen. I think as far as I remember, this talk started when Shanahan went to the Bama Pro Day instead of the Ohio State or North Dakota State Pro Days, and then made a comment when asked about it that was, he said something along the lines of, when you're picking at three, you don't have to hide as much. Which at the time seemed to indicate really strongly that they're looking at Mac Jones. I mean, obviously both schools have had pro days since then, like second pro days since then. So the effect ended up not in that particular event ended up not mattering entirely, but, I don't know. Ever since Baker Mayfield went one in 2018, it's hard for me to not put stock into the words where there's smoke, there's fire type of perspective. I don't know. Who do you expect to see go at three?
I honestly don't know, because like it's just hard for me to wrap my mind around the fact that like it's one thing to take Mac Jones at the third overall. Another thing to trade up that much from to take Mac, like it's hard for me to process, especially when Justin Fields was considered by so many people to be the second best prospect, that I felt it's one thing I have to wrap my head around after I see it, because I can't do it right now.
Justin Fields's fall has been a bit of it's been a kind of familiar thing where you just see like paralysis by analysis with the pre-draft process, where you have a guy who's clearly like a really good quarterback prospect, but he's up there for so long that you just spend all your time picking him apart. I don't understand the downward trend of Justin Fields' stock here, especially after how he played in the playoffs
against Clemson. I find it a bit shocking. And then here's I think what it comes down to: there are definitely concerns to be had with Justin Fields, but he's pretty much done what anyone would expect of someone. He was consensus seen as like a top two prospects coming into this year. He had a bit of a rough start, but like everything he did since then has kind of been what you would hope for. He rebounded and played great. He looked amazing against Clemson.
With an injury too.
Yeah, exactly. And then in the like pre-draft workout, he ran a 4.4, which is like, so it's like
perfect. Mariota did that and they picked him too.
And it's like his tape is better than Mariota's was. And now you're seeing Fields dropping to like the Broncos at nine. And maybe I can wrap my head around Kyle Shanahan outsmarting himself. We've seen that in the Super Bowl. But like, why would the Falcons getting Fields at four would be like a match made in heaven?
The Falcons picking at four is a really interesting problem. For me, I'm convinced that they're not picking a quarterback. I think partially from my Patriots homerism that I want QBs to fall a little farther.
There always does seem to be one quarterback that everyone highly rates that falls out of the top 10. And I feel like it's been pretty consistent that it's been said that it's going to be either Fields or Lance at this point, which I think it says something maybe that the two black quarterbacks are the ones who
everyone
thinks are going to fall. despite like not.
Yeah, despite both being not, like outstanding prospects.
And not quite clear reasons for what dropped them in the mindset of teams, you know.
Yeah, the primary argument I've seen against Justin Fields is the Ohio State argument, basically, that like Ohio State quarterbacks don't do well in the NFL, which at least in the Urban Meyer system, fair, very fair. Since Alex Smith, Urban Meyer QBs haven't really performed well in the league. And I mean, Ryan, this is considering Justin Fields, Urban Meyer quarterback, essentially just because of the Ryan Day system. But that can be said of almost pretty much every quarterback except Trevor Lawrence.
Exactly.
In the first round.
That's what I was going to bring me to.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say is like Justin Fields has a combination of talents that you haven't often seen from an Ohio State quarterback. Whereas Mac Jones, I feel like, is basically, it's hard for me to see a huge difference from a lot of Alabama prospects. It's mostly like people like, no, if you really watch the tape like I did, man, like you'd see that like he's being underrated by all this. He, like, I don't know what to tell you. He looks very much like a person, an Alabama quarterback throwing to top talent and having a great running game. And
he doesn't look like I mean, if you're talking about watching the tape, his throws don't pop off the tape really at all. What jumps off the tape is that his receivers are open by 15 yards every time he throws the ball. Like Mac Jones, like, I don't know. I mean, his production is tough to argue with. This past season, he had a really, really good year. He had about as good a year as you could expect someone throwing to those receivers to throw to. But yeah, he didn't. I mean, watching the Alabama Florida game, Kyle Trask looked like a better thrower than Mac Jones in that game.
I've been on this beat for a while, man. I seriously don't understand, because that's the first thing that comes to my mind when you mention production is Kyle Trask was a Heisman candidate.
Yeah,
basically, like was hurt most by a game where he had none of his. None of his receiving talent. He was playing with all new receivers in a meaningless bowl game. Whereas what he did in the SEC championship and even in like the Arkansas game without Pitts, like it was like I think some of the takes we're looking at is like even just like prospect rankings, like Daniel Jeremiah rating like Mac Jones, not, regardless of like mocking or like team need,
right?
Like just that purely as a prospect, as like a first round rated prospect. Whereas I like no one is putting Trask in that conversation, and
it's
a bit strange. We'll see if we get proven wrong, but.
Yeah,
I think this firmly goes in the strange risers that seem
really
to,
because usually a strange riser has physical tools. Usually a strange riser looks like DK Metcalf or Josh Allen.
Yeah, well, that brings me to the other thing I want to touch on, which is like what I've specifically had the most problem with is like even if you like Mac Jones as a prospect, I've really had this problem with him being labeled more pro ready than Justin Fields or like Trey Lance. Right. Even I think pro ready is such a loaded and purposefully vague term. Yeah. Like what does it actually mean? If you break it down, like what would
usually
you
means white.
It? Yeah, exactly. Like let's think about it. Like it's implying that you'd have the most success immediately in the NFL. Historically, what quarterbacks have had the most immediate impact, regardless of their overall career arcs? Athletic quarterbacks, quarterbacks with traits.
Yeah.
Mac quarterbacks
Jones, with traits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I might get shit for this, but like, I kind of don't understand why the 49ers would even move on from Jimmy Garoppolo to Mac Jones when I kind of think of Mac Jones as like Jimmy Garoppolo without the experience, at least to clarify, for the coming season, not
right.
In general, yes, he has a higher ceiling, but in terms of pro ready, high floor.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I think that's the thing about the Niners pick at three that makes me think they're probably going Fields there, just because Mac Jones doesn't represent, let alone an upgrade. He's barely a change at quarterback, from what Jimmy Garoppolo gives them. So I think if they're, unless they're really just concerned about tenure and re-signing Jimmy and having Mac Jones for 15 years rather than Jimmy it for 10, like, I guess they could justify picking Mac Jones for that reason. But I think because they have Jimmy on the team, I think Justin Fields is the only pick that makes sense for them to have moved up for him. Mm-hmm. But who knows?
Before we get done talking about quarterbacks, I think there's an elephant in the room too we need to address, and that's
is it your Chris team? Sims.
Oh
no. Okay.
Oh yeah. I just wanted to talk more generally.
Yeah.
If you've been following the draft at all, you know the kind of impact Chris Sims has been having. So Chris Sims was much higher on Lamar Jackson coming into the 2018 draft than most people. He's got a bit of a reputation for that. He's been very he's been throwing out some takes. You saw his quarterback rankings. I think he had Kellen Mond rated higher than Fields and Lance. He had Zach Wilson better than Trevor Lawrence. He had Mac Jones as a top three prospect. He said when the 49ers were picking at 12th overall that Kellen Mond would be a reasonable pick there. His fans are very adamant about what he's picked out before. It's worth noting he has...
Who's a Chris Sims fan?
I'm just telling you my experience of the internet, man.
I believe you. I fully believe you.
I think it's worth noting he's put out multiple different rankings, different years, and changed his mind, which
you're allowed to do, but
you'd think that would at least be an asterisk,
on the being right about Lamar thing.
Look, let's give him the benefit of the doubt and just say, the take his best rankings each year and the success he's had. I don't think his rankings really, like his descriptions, I just fundamentally don't think they make sense, even if he gets them all right. Even if he's right about all, I just think his reasoning was...
I need to pull this up actually and look at this.
He said Zach Wilson. I don't want to paraphrase his entire argument, so tell me if I'm wrong. One of the reasons he put Zach Wilson above Trevor Lawrence was that he throws from multiple arm angles, which cool. That's better. Yep. That makes you better than Trevor Lawrence. He mentioned how Kellen Mond's low interception rate for his senior season, not talking about his not so great interception rates as other seasons.
Right.
There's also Felipe Franks threw four picks the entire year for Arkansas.
Oh,
is that
Right. Is that Trey Lance has thrown one pick in his life. Like,
well, that's totally different for some reason. Like, I truly do not know. There are a couple guys in that periphery between like the top tier and lower tier. Right. I truly don't understand what people are seeing as much in. Football is by nature small sample sizes, but like,
right, that's what makes
had Kellen Mond put up the exact same stats but not played as well against Alabama in right. that one game,
right?
Or, and I think even more to the point, if Chris Sims had not mentioned him, would Kellen Mond really be getting all the play he is in like internet draft circles?
He's been getting a lot of talk in Patriots internet circles quite a bit. And I think that's partially just because he does sit on that outside kind of area where I think for the Pats specifically, they need to trade up if they want to get a top five guy. So Kellen Mond might be the best pick without a trade up. But
this is what I'm trying to say. Unless Chris Sims has some inside information that none of us know about, even if he's right that Kellen Mond, we're all not seeing something that he's going to be special. He's going to be the next Dak Prescott, whatever. It still makes no sense to take him mid first round. Unless you have some intel that, like, many teams rate him as a first-round prospect. Dak Prescott got taken in the fourth round, and, like, it wouldn't have made sense to take him way earlier since he was not seen consensus as a first-round prospect. This is what I'm trying to say is, even if I give Chris Sims the benefit of the doubt,
right,
the things he's just saying just fundamentally don't make sense.
Right.
Even And I guess it goes to show the nature of the draft where, like, if you can make these bold predictions, you are given a certain leeway.
Yeah. Well, it's because none of us know. Yeah. So if you make a bold prediction, people have to listen to it because, I mean, none of us actually know. So, I mean, Chris Sims can say, I'd take Kellen Mond over, I'd take Zach Wilson over Trevor Lawrence. And we have to listen to him because,
which coincidentally, you'd never hear it taken. Chris Sims says he's a better prospect. You've never heard anyone actually affiliated with an NFL team say we're thinking of taking Wilson over Lawrence or like we rate him highly.
Yeah.
I just think that there is a fundamental, like, it's very easy to make this take where if you know it's not like anyone's actually going to take your advice and take Wilson over Lawrence.
Right.
So it's like, it's just if Wilson ends up being the better player, you're going to look real good. And if it doesn't work out, you can just say, well, I said Trevor Lawrence was going to be great too. It just turned out that he was like even greater than I thought. Like,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
I guess let's see how this ages. It's if I'll give him one thing. If all those rankings come out the way he said, maybe he really is Nostradamus and maybe he will get a freaking NFL. He deserves an NFL GM.
Yeah.
Job,
good for him.
But,
yeah,
man, it's really hard for me to trust him, especially when, like, he's just saying some things that just fundamentally do not make sense.
Yeah. All right. Before we move on from quarterbacks, who's your guy? Outside of Trevor Lawrence, who do you think is going to be the best QB in this class?
That's such a hard one. I have such mixed feelings on this class.
Yeah, well, your team's picking it too, so.
Seems like we're going Wilson. Wilson, I guess this is our opportunity to throw out our own, what could be our own draft analysis that's bad. I'm not as high on Wilson as some people. You can see what's special with all these prospects. Like you can see where people are coming from. Well, not with Kellen Mond, but the top guys.
Sure.
Like he can play like really electric. The thing I worry about, and I guess that goes back to this being about draft analysis, is like the way he's being talked about.
Yeah.
The fact that like I'm almost my worry is most about the fact that I almost feel like things that are potential like concerns are being talked up
as strengths.
Like him just like shedding clean pockets and like throwing
without
setting his feet, throwing on the run, which are good traits to have if like in bad situations.
Yeah, it's a good thing to be able to do.
But when you're being told, this is my concern, when you're being told by draft experts and people in the league that the reason you are being taken second overall is to make you Superman throws.
Yeah.
Like that is the things in our tape that we want you for. Then you put him behind, and this is another thing that's not getting talked about, is how good that BYU offensive line was.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get put behind the Jets offensive line, unless we can make some major improvements in the draft. Like,
right.
I'll put it this way. He's a very boom or bust prospect, but I don't, it's much easier right now to talk about the boom than the bust, you know?
Right. Yeah, totally.
Of course, totally. I have PTSD as a Jets fan, so maybe I'm just being cynical.
Right. Right. Y'all just moved off of Sam Darnold. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm also not so super high on Zach Wilson, but I'm not like, I don't know, the criticism of him being based in him having played for BYU, like, I don't know, would you rather have a guy who played for North Dakota State than BYU? Would you rather have a guy from the very non-pro Ryan Day style than a guy from BYU? I don't know. I don't know. I really don't know. I like Justin Fields out of the guys not named Trevor Lawrence. I think with the right system around him, he could perform. Hopefully that right system is New England. That's my hope.
Well, here's the funny part. Is the second, if he does, like, if the Patriots trade up a few spots,
right?
Suddenly everything you've heard goes out the window. Suddenly then Justin Fields was the smart, it was obviously number two, maybe number one. And and Bill Belichick had the steal of the draft. What are you talking about? Concerns. like that's how quick all that stuff goes out the window.
Of course. Yeah. So to move on to the other, in my opinion, maybe the most interesting position in this draft is the wide receiver position. And there's one trend of draft analysis that I don't understand. And I think no matter how these guys' careers turns out, I don't think I will understand this. And that is the Jaylen Waddle over Devontae Smith, talk. Where I've seen him being rated higher than Devontae Smith on the basis of his you can't deny it. He can make plays. Like he runs by people like they're standing still. He can run routes, he can make plays down the field. And he's the type of guy that I'm sure is very attractive to a lot of teams, but how can you watch Alabama tape and choose him is my question. How can you watch last season and be aware of the fact that Devontae Smith had what, 1500 yards, 1600 yards in a 13 game season. And just watching him like dominate the first half of that national championship game and just really, really take control down the field of every game he's played in this past season. I think I don't know, can't miss prospect gets thrown around a ton, but I don't know how you can pick after Ja'Marr Chase. I don't know how you can pick another receiver than Devontae Smith if he's on the board.
Well, yeah, it goes back to what we've been saying about like eye test. Like,
yeah,
this happens every year with the draft where you're told not to believe your eyes, basically.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we watched the college football playoff and Mac Jones was just dumping it off to Devontae Smith and Najee Harris to make plays all the time. It's like, well, you can't believe your eyes. That was all about Mac Jones's incredible intelligence that was looking these guys up.
Yeah.
Jalen Waddle, it was for some reason, Jalen Waddle, like,
he was hurt, I think.
Yeah.
For that game. Which, I mean, I actually don't know what the injury was, but I don't know. That's another concern, I think. I think people talk about Devontae Smith's weight, but that's another concern I have with Jalen Waddle as well. Like, if you have a guy whose thing is his wheels, he better stay healthy his whole career, basically, if he's going to be as productive as you want him to be. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I get the weight thing. I get being 170 is not ideal for a first round NFL prospect, but I mean, I don't know how you can look at him play and not think, I'm picking this guy if he's on the board, you know?
And it's just a trend. Like, I felt the same way about Lamb, who I thought had even fewer potential problems last year. I thought he jumped off the screen, then Ruggs and Judy went above him. And
right.
I don't know. I do think that this stuff does make me wonder if it's over analysis and just like you watch a top guy too much to the point that you start to notice more flaws in him than lower rated guys.
Yeah.
Because it just seems like it happens so much every year.
Yeah, it happens every time.
Guy that falls behind guys that just very clearly seem to not be as good.
Yeah. People are picking. I mean, every time that Jalen Waddle is brought up ahead of Devontae Smith, I'm sorry. Did he not just win the Heisman as a wide receiver? Like, I know people want to put weight into physical tools and kind of high ceiling type of guys. I don't know if Jalen Waddle's highest ceiling is higher than what we saw from Devontae Smith with our eyes on the field last year.
Yeah. I always think about too, like different sport, obviously, like the book Moneyball about
right.
A is basically just valuing results over like people projecting the upside of guys. Right. And you wonder if football is just a little behind with the analytics revolution where it's screw this, trying to like outsmart yourself with thinking about system or like project these different things. Like if a guy is special, a guy is special. If there's one thing as an amateur prognosticator of the draft who has obviously been wrong to myself, like, when someone looks special, they're special. Like, I know we're not talking about running backs today, but like, I feel the same way about Najee Harris. Like, looks special to me. Maybe I'm completely off base, but like, seems like Alabama running backs have a pretty good track record.
Yeah, so that's the other thing.
Why not? I just feel that you take amateurs from like the most casual, like the person who literally just watches the national championship because their family does, right, and go up to most people who are like the most watching of this draft and say, doesn't it seem like that quarterback is like just this great talent that is doing things for Alabama? Or maybe that guy who just like hurdled a full grown man
and
broke off for a touchdown run. Is he the one that special talent might be more like might be more responsible and thus more projectable to the NFL?
Yeah.
Get mostly maybe the same answer. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe if I'm a bottom dwelling team, I might want to pick the wideout who just had like 200 yards in the first half of a championship game rather than the quarterback throwing to him. I don't know. But yeah, what other spots are you looking at besides the quarterback and the wide receiver spot that you think you've seen some interesting conversations about this cycle around?
Well, I think this might be the most egregious is Penei Sewell. I think it hasn't been as widespread, probably because I think most people know this is a particularly egregious analysis. But some mocks and prospect rankings, I think what I most key in on is that Daniel Jeremiah, NFL.com prospect rankings, has Sewell at the 12th overall prospect in the draft.
Yeah.
Has not happened yet, going behind Slater. So this is a guy who gave up no sacks in a year. He was like 19. He won the trophy for like best offensive lineman in the country. He has all the projectable things you want for an offensive lineman at 19. He opts out for a year and like apparently not playing drops you, I guess. I guess we're the college football playoff committee now with like Coastal Carolina.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know. You're getting a bit repetitive here, but like, what do we want to talk about here? You know?
Yeah. What are you missing from this guy, basically? Like, yeah, I think ratings of him being low are kind of incidental. I think we're going to see him in Cincinnati. That's where I have him landing.
I guess this is kind of what we're getting to with this whole thing is like, these people know he's going to land in Cincinnati. Yeah. I know he's probably going to be good. So like, why is it, I guess, that like these insane hot takes you see every draft that are always wrong. Mm-hmm. No one ever holds them accountable. It's not like, oh, you keep getting things wrong about the draft. Well, we're not going to keep you as a draft expert. Like, I know we don't have time to talk about everything, but like Mel Kiper in one of his drafts just had the Dolphins who traded down to number 6, then trading up to number 4. He knows that's not going to happen. He's not stupid. He knows that's not going to happen. Yet ESPN is still going to employ him. ESPN is still going to bring him to the draft process and act like and extol him as this draft expert.
It
comes down to like,
wasn't he a Johnny Manziel guy? Am I remembering this wrong?
I might be thinking of Gruden, to be fair.
You're right. I am thinking of Gruden. Never mind. Yeah. Gruden, who has a job as an NFL head coach right now.
Oh man. But yeah, I think that there's something particular about the draft and the, and if, I don't know, maybe we're starting to wrap up. And the, like, I think why we've all keyed in on the draft is that it's kind of the fact that the NFL has made the draft an event over the years, which it didn't used to be, I think has led itself to all the worst problems with sports media as a whole. With just like deferring to like the most like hearsay, like just like lending itself right into stereotypes. Like the biggest problem is that it's affecting people's actual careers. Like your different draft spot leads to different pay, it's
different money.
And I just think it's so ridiculous that like what is just like clearly to any fan, just like objectively flawed analysis and just like, because it's become just kind of this media circus and like the entertainment of these horrible takes and like stupid moves. It's hard to feel good about the whole process.
Yeah. From like a
purely cynical point of view.
Yeah. And it's also, I mean, you just kind of touched on it. It's also like these 20-year-old kids, like futures kind of at stake in this process as well. So like, I don't know. I think everyone's bored at this point in the NFL calendar.
Yeah. We're it's also so terrible having the draft so late this year. Yeah. It's like I've been working up to this for like a million years. We literally started this idea because in like February we had this Thor Nystrom, I think from Sports Illustrated, I want to say. Or it might be NBC Sports. He rated his quarterback prospects. He had Jamie Newman number 6. And it was all and that's the other thing is like early on in the calendar, I feel like they just kind of feel like they can say whatever.
Yeah.
He just spent a lot of time going on about how he reminded him of David Garrard, who reminded him of David Garrard aesthetically, you know.
Right.
Very interesting.
Can't imagine what you mean by that.
Yeah, yeah. Which like how do you like so much to unpack there? Like, how do you have that much thought process in your head about David Garrard? Like, I don't even think Jacksonville Jaguars fans have ever thought that much about David Garrard.
Yeah, when he was playing, like, I don't think they thought that much about David Garrard.
It comes this perverse, like, weird thing of just, like, white guys, like, projecting their nostalgia weirdness and, like...
Yeah.
Just, like, spouting off about nothing and actually impacting careers and...
Yeah.
And getting paid for it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think with that we can wrap up our little analysis of analysis of this draft. I know we mentioned it before, but before we sign off, Ethan, who do you hope the Jets take it to? If you're picking it to, who do you want them to take? I know I ask you this all the time, but
Is trade down an option in this?
Yeah, trade down's an option.
Yeah, I think I would trade out of that spot and get even more picks. And, like, same thing where, like, would Gardner Minshew really be getting so little play as, like, a trade possibility or for his, like, seen as having so little trade value if he wasn't taken in the 6th round? Like,
that's a really good question, you know? I think that's a really good thought.
And that keeps going to our point too, which is that like even beyond just like the pay scale of the initial pick, like where you're drafted,
it sticks with you.
Impacts the thought around you, your entire career. Affects how many chances you get. So many things. Gardner Minshew's been good in college and good in the NFL.
Yeah,
but like. Any flaw he has will always be emphasized because at one moment, one day of the year.
Cause when he was 22,
they
decided he wasn't worth higher than a 6th round pick. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think,
what do you want the Patriots to do? I guess.
Yeah. I think for you in the Jets moving, I mean, anytime you're a team with that many holes moving down, is probably the right thing.
Even if
it's not the sexy move, even if it's not going to sell you a ton of jerseys, like.
Well, I remember when Sam Darnold was a sexy move. I remember when Sam Darnold was seen as not only the right pick there.
I couldn't believe y'all got Sam Darnold.
We were getting the steal of the draft there and we didn't build around him.
Yeah.
And just more of how our evaluation process is broken. We don't talk much enough about what actually leads to career success or not.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess to answer your question, I think I do want the Patriots to move up and get a QB. I would Fields would be my first choice. I do really like Trey Lance. I like his work ethic. I like how smart he is on the field. Obviously, it's a plus that he's 20 years old. And I think with Cam Newton on the team, I think he has a chance to sit first. He would have a chance to sit first. I think Fields would also have a chance to sit first and adjust to whatever offense we decide we're running. But who knows, Bill Belichick? I've only guessed what Bill Belichick is going to do correctly once, and that was N'Keal Harry. And me and Bill were both wrong about that. So we'll see. All right. Thank you all for listening. I've been David Cody. That's been Ethan Jobson. Peace out.